right, it is time for us to start our meeting. And it is Tuesday, October 13th, 5 o'clock p.m. We need to excuse Connie Morgan for some health issues and Christy Cooley for a volleyball game. Our first item of business tonight is our consent calendar, action on extra pay for extra services for licensed personnel and school land trust revisions.
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent calendar.
All right. I'll second.
Good. It's been moved by Lynn and seconded by Lisa. All those in favor say aye.
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 All right, our next item of business, we now are in a work session. And we have discussion items tonight, and the superintendent is our presenter, and I would guess these fine people at the desk up there probably have input as well. We really do appreciate our district directors. We thank you for what you do, and we thank you for being here tonight. So, superintendent, we will go into our discussion of on measures and reporting of student growth.
And Marcy's going to have about three slides she's going to talk about in just a minute.
So you need your microphone.
I'm just kidding. They will be available for questions. But no, they don't have to share anything. But
they look very official where they are.
They look extremely official. It's what sitting behind a barrier, what barrier will do to you. This is good. No, you normally look very official, Teresa. What we want to do is go over two things, and we do have a projection on that screen right there. So, John, we're going to be projecting right behind you. If you want to follow along, you can sit right here and it'll be a little bit easier for you to see. The two things we want to talk about tonight is, first of all, just share some of the discussions that we've been having, looking at our mission, vision, goals, and commitments as a school district. And then also we'll talk about some of the measurements of student growth that we're using and just kind of update everyone on where we're at with that. Of course, the reason why we want to start with this conversation is the understanding that setting the right course starts with understanding what our destination is. As we talk about professional learning communities and the process and how we strengthen those frameworks, it all starts with having clear sense of purpose. You know, what is it that we're trying to accomplish? And, you know, you all have seen me use this graphic before. If we're not really clear on both what we're trying to get or where we're trying to get and the path that we're trying to follow, it's very easy to get lost in the detours. And we just start walking in circles and end up getting off course. So really what the purpose of the discussion of a mission, vision, and goals is about is being very clear on the destination. Where are we trying to get? So if you break it down into four components, your mission, vision, collective commitments, and your measurable outcomes, we're going to go through each of these, but our mission is our fundamental purpose. Really the question we have to answer is, why does Logan City School District exist? What is the purpose for having public school district? Our vision is what we expect to see in the future. As we accomplish the purpose that we've delineated in our mission, what are the things that we expect to see? What do we expect to accomplish with that? The collective commitments then are the things that we will do, the attitudes that we'll exhibit, the behaviors that we'll use to accomplish our purpose. And finally, what are we going to do to measure our progress? What are we going to do to show that we're actually moving towards that mission? So what we've tried to do working with the directors, working with the principals, is clarifying each of those four areas as we go through them. And at any point, board members, if you have questions about pieces, you've seen some of these, a couple of these if you do, we can discuss it. So the mission, as we talked about, let's see, we did this about 2 months ago now.
Yeah.
The discussion of why do we exist as a school district? What is the reason why the Logan City School District is there? We talked about a lot of different things, but what it came down to was ensuring that all students leave our schools ready to create a positive future for themselves and their community. Students are going to leave our schools, and they're going to take a number of different paths. Some of our students are going to go on to four-year and more degree programs. Others are going to do technical training. Others are going to become entrepreneurs. There are countless paths that our students might take when they leave us. Our job is to prepare them to be successful regardless of what path they take. Our job is not to determine what path that is. Our job is to help them to develop the skills, the attitudes, and the behaviors that will allow them to choose a path with success. Now, that's not the end of their growth. And we're not saying that when they leave our school district, they will have learned everything they need to be successful in whatever career they choose. They're going to have to do something else. But we have done everything that's necessary for them to be able to choose that path and start moving forward successfully. That is the reason why the school district exists, to help students develop those skills so they can then make those decisions for themselves, for their benefit, and for the benefit of their families and the communities that they live in. So if we're saying we're really talking about opportunity for kids, we're talking about opening doors of opportunity for students, How could we measure that? What could we say if we had to look at one metric, one thing that could tell us, are we putting students in a better position to do that? What could we look at? And what we decided to go with as part of our vision is the ACT College Readiness Benchmarks. Now, the College Readiness Benchmarks, just to review, are four benchmarks. They're in reading, English, math, and science. If you meet all four of those benchmarks, you have a 50% chance or better of getting a B or higher in your freshman year college classes. So what they've looked at, they looked at a lot of historical data and said, okay, if you can reach a certain level of performance on the ACT, you are much better prepared to be successful in your freshman year college classes, which we know is where a lot of students struggle. That first year of college, as they go to a new place, they might be away from home. The academic rigor that's required does start to cause some real challenges for them. So what we've looked at is say, okay, where are we in terms of those college readiness benchmarks? Last year, of the students at Logan High that took the ACT, 23% of them met all four benchmarks. Nationally, the average is 26. So what we would like to do is first, over the next 3 years, so at the end of the 2017-2018 school year, the percentage of students reaching all four of the ACT's college readiness benchmarks will meet the national average. At the end of the 2019-20 school year, we want to pass the national average. Now, that's not an easy goal. It is challenging. Getting up to that level, moving the needle on ACT performance is challenging. If we were to, as we look at the data on what meeting these benchmarks means and the doors that we want students to be able to choose to go through, we felt like this is one data point. This is a goal that will help us to say, if we can get students performing at this level, they're going to be able to choose which path they go. Now, some of them may still choose not to go to a four-year university program, but they're going to have the reading skills, the writing skills, the math skills, the thinking skills that will allow them to be successful regardless of which path they start going down. Now, the other thing we looked at with the vision is we said, okay, if we ask ourselves what do we want to accomplish for students over the next 3 to 5 years, there are a lot of things we could put in there. Everything, you know, all of our community engagement, all of our communication strategies, all of our curriculum decisions, etc. As the directors and I have really been digging into this some more, and we've been doing more reading and looking at kind of the data on districts and schools across the country that have reached these high levels of success, the prevailing or the predominant characteristic is they don't focus their goals on everything. There's acknowledgement that all of those things have to happen. Those all are part of having a successful system. But those aren't all the mission or the vision. The focus is we're here to make sure students learn. And everything we do is going to focus on that, recognizing there are a lot of
things that are going to be part of our actions. But in terms of our goals, we focus in and we have a laser-like focus on that one need, because that's what ties into our purpose as an organization. Any questions about the mission or vision part so far? Okay. The next piece is, well, how do we track progress? Because we have to know if we're moving towards the goal. We don't want to set a 3 to 5 year goal and not have any idea if we're getting there until the end of the 5 years. So we have to look at some district level measures. They give specificity and measurability to our priorities, and they help us focus on results. And I like this quote as we've been digging through things. It says, when an organization has multiple unmeasurable priorities, there's lots of activity, but not much really gets done. And results are slow to come or non-existent. What we want to do is say we have a handful of measurable priorities that we're going to really emphasize, and we're going to deliberately choose our actions to make sure that we're addressing those goals. So we've chosen 4 that would be annual improvements. The first would be the percentage of students meeting all 4 of the ACT college readiness benchmarks will increase by 1 point. If we can do that 1 point every year, we'll meet our vision goal. Now that one is predominantly, especially the first year high school. That's where we're going to see the measurement. That's where we're going to see the growth. It is impacted, especially over the next 5 years, by what goes on at the high school and the middle school. But that first one will primarily be addressed by the high school. Second, the percentage of students scoring at proficiency on each of the 2016 SAGE assessments will increase by 2 points at each school when compared to their 2015 results. So we're not saying all schools will perform at level X. We're saying every school is going to grow. Every school is going to improve based on where they're at. And this was a goal that the building principals actually came up with at the end of last year in terms of a goal that they thought would focus on growth, be something that would be manageable at each school, and would still keep us moving in the positive direction. The third one, and this is actually based off a state goal related to early childhood literacy. Every student, kindergarten through third grade, will have a growth score at or above the 48th percentile as measured by the Dibbles assessments. That has come from the state office as they've looked at national data on Dibbles, which is, you know, is an early literacy skills test. They've looked at what rates of growth are expected, where we want our students to be. And as they've looked at that data and seen the progress that students in Utah generally make, they said, look, we want to make sure students are performing at or above the 48th percentile. That matches our historical data. That matches what the national data suggests is reasonable to expect. So let's set that goal. So that is one that will really be primarily addressed by our kindergarten through third grade teachers. And our last one is probably the one that's going to have the biggest, what's the best way to say this?
Angst.
Well, angst on one level, a big emphasis, but it's also the one where you think if we can show this over time, we're going to have a very solid picture of students improving their performance. Every student who takes the 2016 SAGE assessments will have a student growth percentile equal to or greater than 50. Now, the growth percentiles, they work very exactly the same as, well, they don't work exactly the same, but conceptually they're the same as when we take our kids and their babies to the doctor and they measure their head and their length and their weight and, oh, you're in the 46th percentile, or you know, some of my kids, you're in the 3rd percentile for height and the 60th for weight. You know, you're a bowling ball and that will be okay. They're just solid.
My kids have big heads.
And, you know, and those are things that happen. The student growth percentile means the same thing. If you reach if you hit a 40 or so, that means you perform better than 40% of the students who scored at the same level you did. The nice thing about student growth percentile is it really focuses on the individual student's growth. One of the challenges with proficiency is you're lumping everybody in the school who's in there and just saying, okay, what grade did you get? When you start looking at student growth percentile, you're saying, okay, how much progress have you individually made compared to where you were last year? It really focuses on constant improvement, constant moving forward. And we had some discussion. Is the 50th percentile, is that too high? Should we lower it? And to our principal's credit, they participated in the conversation. They said, but who are we going to say are the students that we don't want to make that growth? Who are the students that we're comfortable saying, it's all right that you make less than average growth, because we've got these kids over here that are making more than average growth. He said, no. We want every student, we want to be able to guarantee in the Logan City School District, every student is going to make at or above average growth. Now, they may start really low, but we want them to keep moving forward, and we want to do that in a concrete way. Finally, the last thing we have is our collective commitments, and these are the things that we are willing to commit to help achieve these goals. Your collective commitments drive the conduct of the people in the district. They describe the attitudes and the behaviors and the values that we want to exhibit. They talk about how we're going to operate on a day-to-day basis. And really, it's, okay, if we want this vision to become a reality, here are the things we're going to do. I know many of you are familiar with TRACS. This is where TRACS fits in. As the Board of Education and Administration of the district, we will provide training, we provide resources, we ensure achievement expectations are high, we ensure communication is open, and we provide safety. Now, each of our elements of TRACS are an essential part of our ongoing progress as a district. Our goal and our mission have to do with what types of skills are students developing and what types of opportunities are they ready to take advantage of when they leave us. TRACS is what governs our behavior as a district to help that mission and that vision become a reality. So the next things that we're doing, first we want to get your input as a board right here, if you're still comfortable with these. If you are, then what I would like to do is on November 4th, plan two focus groups, a teacher focus group and a parent focus group. Have them here at the district. I'd like to have them going in different rooms at the same time. And they would be comprised of school community council members from each school. And the focus would be to gather their input on, you know, what they think. Do these goals reflect the interests of our community? Do they reflect what everybody wants to accomplish in the district? And especially from the teachers, what is needed to help these become a reality? What do people see is needed to make these achievable? I would then bring the information back from those meetings to you all as a board, and I would like for us to be able to officially adopt these in our December meetings for meeting.
Mary, did you know that night we have the Elwood Superintendent open house?
On November 4th?
That's what I have, yeah. Is that when we reschedule it? Okay, maybe. I don't always do well. Just wanted to make sure.
I think the Ellis meeting is Thursday the 5th.
Okay.
So this
I
would be.
I won't change
this would be
that.
Wednesday.
I just wanted to make sure we didn't double schedule us because I would guess the school community council groups will probably be more in the evening.
Yeah.
And where our educators will be.
Yes.
Okay. Forget. I will edit this and put it on the right day.
So. That's where we've been so far. We've just had these discussions with the directors. We've spent a significant amount of time visiting with them about these. We've shared them with the principals, had discussions with them about what they thought. There were questions that they had moving forward. We've reached some consensus there. So what the next step would be to take this out to a broader community and share it with them and see what they feel about the direction that we want to go. So questions from you all.
I know my original reaction when I saw it was that we were just focusing on high school. You know, that's what it appears when you just look at ACT. But as I
pondered on it after we talked about this, is that importance of, and could we go back a couple of slides?
Certainly.
That importance of
the K-2
that
K-3.
Wasn't my difference. This one, you break it down, and so it is, though we have the ACT there, it also shows the ways on other levels
mm-hmm.
we will be reaching it. Now, one of my questions was, on the ACT, are we going to be using at the middle school and ninth grade, where we have the other ACT
tests? The eighth graders do the Explore.
Uh-huh. And will we be using those kind of as predictors? You haven't listed those as we're going to to target if we're headed in the right direction or not. I just wondered why you were not including those as a measurement of progress.
We haven't talked about those specifically. We were trying to keep it down to four, but we could add that in as an indicator of where we're going. They do have the benchmarks set for the Explore as well. So you can see if you have students reaching this level on the Explore, they're on track to hit the benchmarks on the final ACT as well.
I would want you to take that back to the directors and the principals, just that we're already having them take it, and I think we should at least
look at it
and seeing are they on the trajectory or not. And what we've been told previously, I know Gerald did quite a nice presentation last year on truly if they're not doing well earlier, that there can be, unless intervention is made, the likelihood of them passing the ACT in all four areas are not really
great. You
get
the data and you have to respond to it.
Yeah. Right, and I just think we need to be intervening earlier than our prep course for the month before we take the ACT.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
So we started looking at stuff, as they took the final and the Explore to see what track they're on.
And if it were instituting a new test, I'd say don't go there.
I guess my question would be is the amount of movement we have within the valley, the new students that we have in school year each year, how would we, as I look at that, we want to increase by 2 points with SAGE. Now, how will we determine that, or are we just not going to be counting those kids? So the first time they're here in our schools.
Right. So students who took the test in another district, the previous year's test in another district, and how they're doing. There are a couple of things that we do. We can do some move-in, move-out reports, so we can identify who are the students that were in our district the previous years and look at their growth. As we look at the student growth percentile, that's the one that isn't as heavily impacted by, let me say that differently. The student growth percentile allows us to really focus in on what impact have we had mm-hmm. on a student. Now, the student comes to us in February, we look at that data and we say, okay, here's a student who's, this is their data, it's used in our school reporting to the state, but as we evaluate our progress towards goals, this isn't one that we're really going to pay a lot of attention to because the student wasn't with us until the last 2 months of the school year. But if we have a student who moves in earlier in the year, our student growth percentile ranking really lets us look at what impact are we having on that student's achievement. From the beginning to the end. So it is something we'll have to look at as we pull the reports, and we'll have to run some numbers to say, okay, if we really want to dig down deep into this, who are the students who were with us, for the majority of the year,
mm-hmm.
who are the students who were not, and pull some of that data. And that's something to be a little bit of work, but we can do that.
Basically, a lot of the same comments about that you have is like, I think we need to utilize the data from the middle school
mm-hmm.
too, and not just wait to what the ACT is the year they're getting ready to take it.
Right.
So we can intervene early. And then I think with the growth, we're just tracking the growth they had in their score the year before, so we had them.
Yeah, if we had them.
It's just
yeah.
if they moved in during the middle of the year, then.
Yeah.
like you said, you move it in February, it's kind of hard to
say
they did have growth or not based on.
And the other thing I should probably do here that might help is right now the first goal is the high school one.
Mm-hmm.
If we flip the order some and started with the every student K-3, it might reflect that progress toward the ACT goal is intended to be a system-wide
approach. That's the
it's
event.
Not, hey, high school, get this taken care of, and we'll all kind of come along, you know, as we can.
Yeah,
it
that
starts
probably
with,
that probably be the last goal.
Yeah, and I can we can switch that around as we format it and say, you know, because I know in my previous district when we talked about ACT scores, there was a definite tendency that people say, oh, so you don't...
We don't have to worry
elementary
about
elementary really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And the answer was no. Elementary matters tremendously because long term, you will never reach these goals if elementary is not actively under identifying here's what has to happen in the early grades in order for this to even be a possibility.
And I think that's why it's important that we put in there that we are looking at the ones they take in the middle school.
We explore
to, and specifically mention them so that it looks like there's the middle school is in and not just, you know, we've got a K through 3. Kind of looking at that, I was kind of wonder, okay, where's the middle school in there?
And they would,
and stage tests.
The stage tests, it does, but...
Hits them all.
But the explore would be a good temperature check to see how close we are to reaching the goal at that point.
One of my questions, and I start getting confused which tests, you know, which are norm referenced and which are DIBLs. Everyone, we could have 100% at the 48th percentile if we want to, or higher, correct?
Right.
And so it's not one that, hey, that there will always be 25% over and 25% lower.
No. Their data is more, they've done it long enough and have a large enough database that they're able to track over time, okay, what is a reasonable expectation of growth? Here's how you split that into percentiles based on all the students that have been taking it. But every one of your students can reach that goal. Now, eventually, if you know, Utah keeps doing that, then maybe eventually DIBLs benchmarks start changing a little bit, but every one of our students could reach that benchmark.
And the same holds true for stage assessments.
Yes.
And at first I was a little concerned about the growth one because we were, when we were initially told about growth, we were told there was some frustration that someone who scored 98 last year and got a 97 this year, they were considered that they didn't receive growth. And so that was one of the things we heard previously, that things were not fair, that kids who should have, if you're already up, way up there, if you don't do quite as well, you shouldn't be deemed. And I don't know if that's something they've taken care of, if that was just overemphasized. What are your feelings on that?
Based on the numbers that we've been seeing, the state's guideline for growth is you're considered to have made adequate growth if you reach the 40th percentile. If you're in the 40th percentile or above, you have made adequate growth. Now, the number of kids who are scoring at the top end and are scoring so high that, you know, they're going to drop a point or two, I think we're talking about a small enough percentage of students that it's not going to have a significant impact on school grading. Now, in terms of our personal goals as a district, we look at that and we say, well, okay, we've got some students that, you know, they came in, you know, again, you never want to look just at one measure and make all your decisions based off that one. You say, well, gosh, this student, their growth score was in the 25th percentile. Really? Well, let's look at it. Well, their proficiency score was, you know, in the 98. Okay, we're not going to worry about that one. Yeah. They've maxed out the test.
And
we're
I
not going to worry so much about their grade.
When it first came out,
right,
people were so expecting those upper end kids to pull everybody else up in growth, and they don't necessarily do that.
Right.
Which is nice because it reflects that our kids who are moving from below proficiency still. We can show what we're doing with kids who are below proficiency as they move towards proficiency. which I think is one of the good things about Sage.
Yeah. And I do think those kids who are at the very top of the scale, who have maxed out the test, that is an extremely small percentage of students, especially where the test is adaptive and it continually gets more difficult. There are still students out there who are going to max out and they're going to ace the test. We should be aware of that, but I don't think we need to worry too much about including that in our calculation.
Okay, and we did have one perfect ACT this year. So.
Yeah, there are a few of them there.
And so they do every once in a while max it out. But yeah, I like the rearranging myself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would agree on that.
Okay, I can do that. And I'll go back to the directors and the principals and we'll talk about including Explorer data and see how we want to present that.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well that leads into the discussion of student growth. Now the first question really is, well, why would you even focus on growth? Why don't you just focus on proficiency and just go for that basic score? That's what we really want students to get to, so why even discuss growth? And well, the first thing is we acknowledge that student growth might be significant even if proficiency hasn't been reached. We may have students who are not at the level where we ultimately want them to be, but they have made significant progress. I remember at Wilson, we had a student, I was a principal there, and this student was in fifth grade, was still not at the benchmarks for reading. And the student was getting frustrated because he knew he wasn't at the benchmarks for reading. But we pulled up his report that showed his growth over the previous 2 years, and his growth curve was almost double that of the average student. So his teacher and I sat down with him and said, look, this is how much growth the average fifth grader makes in reading. This is how much growth you have made. You've doubled what everyone else is doing. You keep doing this, you're going to be just fine. And he left, feeling much better about where he was at and in terms of his progress. We need to talk about growth because proficiency is not our only desired outcome. And when students only focus on proficiency, you have a couple things that happen. Number one, the students who are really struggling don't see as much of there's not as much motivation to keep going because they're not seeing progress. And your students who are really high don't see a need to keep pushing because they've already met the goal. We saw this at Midvale where we were with some of our gifted students. Once they reach proficiency, they're like, well, I know I've got it. So the motivation to keep improving in many cases started to fall back. So we want to focus on that so we acknowledge the value of growth. Focusing on growth really allows us to monitor the impact of instruction more closely than a focus on proficiency does. Especially, well, if we have a student with us all year, let's say you take their third grade test score and compare it to their fourth grade test score, their proficiency alone doesn't necessarily tell you how much the student has learned or how much they've improved. Because when you're giving standardized tests, the way it works is you administer the test, the state collects all the test scores, you get a student's raw score, but then they sit down, they look at all of the fourth grade students across the state, and they say, okay, how hard was this test? How did all the students do? And based on how everybody did, this is the cutoff for a 4, this is the cutoff for a 3, et cetera, et cetera. So comparing a score from 1 year to the score of the other year, doesn't really tell you how much better a student is doing. Hmm. They might score higher on their fourth grade test, but that doesn't necessarily mean they learn significantly more. The nice thing about SGP with the student growth percentile is it really looks at how much growth did this student make compared to their peers who scored the same as they did on the previous year's test. So Jeff takes the third grade language arts test, and he scores a 97. So now, good job, Jeff, well done. And we won't get into it. He's on math skill, he topped out the math test. But, language arts, he's there at 97.
He now is going to be compared to all other third graders in the state who scored 97 on their language test. He's not going to be compared to the kids who maxed out the test. He's not going to be compared to the kids who are really struggling. He's going to be compared against kids who perform at the same level he did. And then what's going to happen is when he takes his fourth grade English language arts test, they're going to compare how he did on that test with everybody else who was in this group. And they're going to see what percentile he's in. So really, it allows us to focus on what kind of growth is Jeff making based on where he's currently at. And how is he growing compared to other students? That's harder for us to do if we're just looking at a proficiency score on a standardized test. It works better from looking at growth. And as we said before, focusing on growth provides a tool for encouraging our high-performing students to keep pressing forward, keep improving. Don't say, at Sunrise we started saying we got to help kids focus on potential instead of efficiency. We need to get past that.
If I had an A or the highest score in the class, then I could just, I was happy.
Okay.
Yeah, but was I pushed? No. Yeah, in math, yeah, I really was.
Yeah.
But in those other areas where it was easy, so often I did just enough to get the A and then didn't grow at all.
Well, we have a couple of friends who have taught AP classes, and one of them was teaching AP European history 1 year and had a student who attended class maybe 60% of the time.
Got a five.
Five on the AP test. Drove the teacher nuts because the student was able to read and capture the information like that and consequently didn't feel the need to be in class for the discussions or
I had one mother say to me that her child had gotten a high score on the ACT and just said, I'm smart, I don't need to go to school anymore. I'm essentially now dropped out of school.
Yeah. That's not the mindset we want to develop. We want to help them go the other direction.
And I think on the other side, it challenges the teachers. So if you've got kids that are doing very well, you still need to challenge them. I had an issue with my oldest daughter did really well in school, and went to the teacher and I said I really want a challenge because they was, she was in sixth grade and they're basically doing third grade spelling words. And I went back and I said I want a challenge, and the teacher said, well, this is kind of where the rest of the class is, and so this is what we're doing. And I didn't feel like she was getting any growth at all. Everything came home 100%, and it was kind of frustrating because I said, she's there and I want her to grow, and I think that's what this growth. Mm-hmm. Measuring the growth does. It says, I think a lot of kids have been able just to skate through because they do well and everything's fine. And now it says, no, we expect you to grow as well. We want this to be an enriching experience for you as well as the other kids. And so we want to watch and make sure that our job now becomes focusing on, are the kids moving forward and growing? And,
A lot of times I think they'll sign in, kids don't. They just teach yourself their
profession, so. Yeah, and you lose the focus, and then they end up wasting a lot of time that they could be really enriching their experience in school.
Well, there are social issues that come into play when you have, your high-achieving students. If the system isn't focusing on growth and pushing them to continue to improve, they don't ever academically fail. And some of our really high kids have never fail in school, and that
much learning or greater learning when you fail.
Well, there's greater learning in some cases, and they need to learn how to manage it, because the likelihood is at some point those kids that are doing really, really well in school, most of them have plans to go on and do some pretty advanced academic work. At some point they're going to be in a position where it is not going to be easy. It's not going to just come to them. They're going to read something that they get through it the first time and they say, I don't get it. And they've never had to go reread something because they didn't understand. By focusing on growth, continued improvement, continued moving forward, not only do we help students keep growing academically, but we help them develop the mindset that allows them to work through challenges and not develop the idea that I'm smart, so this is supposed to be easy. Because then as soon as it stops being easy, that influences their self-perception as smart. would that cause a problem? So, a lot of reasons to focus on growth. At the school and the district level, we look at growth through a variety of tools that we don't necessarily include in state reports. The STAR test, the common formative assessments that teachers develop with their professional learning communities, the Master Connect test that some of our schools are using. Student growth on the statewide stage assessments is communicated through student growth percentiles and median growth percentiles. Now, the only difference between those is your median growth percentile is calculated by taking all of your student growth percentiles in third grade and finding the middle one. That's it. If you take all of your language arts scores, line them up in order, and pick the middle score, that's your median growth percentile. And that's the one that the state uses for school grading. I'll show you in just a second how they do that. So, again, this is just student growth percentiles. We've already discussed this, but measures the academic progress each student has made in a year and how that student's progress compares to other students with a similar test score history. So if a student achieves an SGP of 40, they grew academically equal to or better than 40% of that student's peers. Even students with low test scores can get high student growth percentiles if they make great progress. And that really is the fantastic thing to see, and we'll see this in just a moment. I'll show you some of Woodruff Elementary School's data we've already discussed. They really did have some outstanding growth percentiles with their students, not just because of the proficiency, but because of the progress they made. So here's what the state uses for assigning points for school grading. And I'll tell you, there was quite a bit of confusion about this. I spent a couple hours on it today because I had this table that I found, and I couldn't make the math work with any of our school grades. So I finally called the state office, and they told me that the table was actually misprinted in their document. So the two bottom rows in their document were flipped, so we couldn't make the math work. So it was much nicer when we had the right formulas and everything started to make sense. But basically they're saying if a student scores above or has a growth percentile, if your school's median growth percentile is above 70, you get 200 points for all students, and then you have your category below proficient students, and they get 100 points. If your median growth percentile is between 30 and 69, you take whatever your median growth percentile is, multiply it by 3.75, and then subtract 62.50, and that tells you how many points you get. I don't know why those numbers. I don't know where those numbers came from, but those are the numbers that work. Those are the numbers that we use. And if you're looking at your below proficient students, you have the same process, just with different numbers. So for example, if a school's median growth percentile for English is 54, you multiply that by 3.75, then subtract 62.5, and you get 140 points. Now there are 300 points available for growth. So you then do the same thing for math. So you get a median growth percentile of 66, multiply it by 3.75, subtract 62.5, and you get 185 points. Science, you do the same thing, you get 144 points. So your average growth points, add those three up and divide them, you get 156.3 points. They round, so we end up with a score of 156 points for your proficient students. And this is what it looks like on the report card. This is for Woodruff Elementary, so you'll see down at the bottom left, you have your three tests, English, Language Arts, Math, and Science. Next to each of them, going to the right, you see the median growth percentile. And then two columns over, you see the points. Those points are determined using the formulas that I just showed you. So then up in the middle, on the right-hand side, below the second bar graph, you'll see a score for all students' growth, and you see a score for below proficient growth. Add those two together, and your total growth points for Woodruff are 230. Out of 300, you'll see the state average was 190. Woodruff Elementary did outstanding with their student growth. We feel like this. And you see, their proficiency was still good. They're right there with the state average, one point above. But we feel like focusing on growth really allows us to recognize the work the teachers are doing. It allows us to recognize the progress students are making and the learning that really is taking place. And if we can improve our growth, we feel confident that that will get us to the point where we're going to hit the proficiency goals that we have. If we can continue to have students keep making that kind of progress, and if that becomes our focus as a district, to that type of growth, we're going to have students performing well, they're going to start doing better on the Explore, we're going to have more students prepared to take the ACT, and we're going to have more students prepared to choose their path when they finish with our their experience with us. So any questions about that report card? These are all available on the data gateway for each school. Oh, sorry, Joe.
What is achievement points? Is that the same as proficiency?
That's proficiency, yeah. And there's a whole other formula for calculating those points. I'd be happy to get that to you. I just didn't put it in this card. So the achievement is proficiency, and the growth is progress. So, this last, I just love this quote because it's by J.C. Penney. Growth is never by mere chance. It is a result of forces working together. In the district, we have a number of things that we are trying to do to support students and support teachers in helping that growth happen. It starts down below, you see, with the professional learning community. That's the vehicle that we're using. That's the vehicle that we want to support as we help provide time and resources that allow teachers to collaborate with one another, learn from one another, make plans together. That's going to lead to improved instruction, and we know improved instruction can lead to improved outcomes. It's the number one factor that we have control over. It's the level of instruction that we provide over the course of the day. Our evaluation system, with student learning objectives, stakeholder input, and the observations the principals conduct, is being built around our improved practices, our improved instruction. And how is that instruction perceived by students? How is it perceived by parents? And how do teachers monitor their progress? And that's going to be tied to our non-negotiable, both for achievement and for instruction. The things that we expect students to learn, and the things that we expect one another as professionals to do to support learning. As we become consistent with those things, as our behavior becomes predictable, we become what the literature calls a high reliability organization. High reliability organizations have clear goals. They have consistent monitoring of progress towards goals. They have an understanding of what conditions are necessary to help those goals become realities. And when we're falling short, there's immediate support and response to change course if necessary, make adjustments, but continue to make progress. Our goal, and my goal as superintendent, is that we are able to have our district and all of our schools form a high reliability organization where we're consistently clear on what it is we're trying to accomplish. We're clear on the steps that we need to take to get there. And we provide the necessary supports that are required. And that, again, ties into the training, resources, achievement focus, communication, and safety that form tracks. So that's kind of the discussion of growth, why that's what we want to build our improvement plans around. That's what we primarily want to be focusing on data-wise, and how that will play a role in the reports that we get from the state and, of course, our school grading. Questions about those?
I'm glad to see that national formula and how it's computed.
We had to dip for a while, but it is there.
It was a mystical thing, and it's good to see an actual.
Yeah.
At least it being a statistician, it makes sense to you, I'm hoping.
Well, and we've been in several, just a couple weeks ago, I was in a conversation with the evaluation and assessment committee that Capitol, and they were looking at some different models, and do we want to continue to use student growth percentiles, or do we want to use some other things, and, you know, finally we came to the, and some of them were, I mean, the psychometricians were really getting excited well, we could do this, and if you look at it this way, you know, statistically, and they had some really, I'm sure there were beautiful statistical models. But we did say, you know, for right now, because there are still changes coming with SAVE, we are still working through the system, let's stay consistent with the tool we're using right now and not throw another wrinkle
in. Well, I don't think growth is a good tool because, like you say, you've got high-end kids and you have low-end, and really what you want to know is that everybody is making progress. And if the kids can look at it and say, yeah, I'm making progress, it gives them something to be excited about. Mm-hmm. If they're maybe not proficient, but they've made significant growth, you can say, look, you've made significant growth.
You know, and I had one really middle kid, and it was always good to see that he was making, you know, that would have been
that they're making progress.
Yeah. You know, he may have been middle in seventh grade, but hey, he's also middle in eighth grade, and he's up, which means he's had growth to stay in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he went to college and majored in engineering and did really great because he was a non-performer.
And he was excited what he was doing now.
Yep.
No, I just think it's great. I think it's good when kids see that they've had growth. I think that's the big thing, because some get labeled as they're down here, you know, we never achieve. But to see, let them see that they have, that the growth that they've had, probably it helps to excite them to do even better. And so I like to focus on growth.
And like you say, sometimes the high-end can get lazy.
Yeah.
They make a line up there and it doesn't matter. But if you're tracking growth, they can see where they're making their progress too.
Well, and I think, you know, we really need to find ways to celebrate the growth, because, like I said, the high achievers are always celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're just skating along, as long as their scores are good, they get attention, they get celebrated for that. But a lot of the kids that aren't doing as well never get any celebration.
Mm-hmm.
They never get any recognition or achievement, and yet they're working hard. And now I think that we can measure the growth easier. That really needs to become more of our focus, is to focus on how do we celebrate those kids that are doing well, better, making better growth, and putting forth that effort. And, you know, and now I think we have measurement tools that we can really be able to do that. And we just need to figure out the best ways that we can,
I think it'd be neat,
honor and celebrate them.
Yeah, along with what Jeff's saying, you know, typically throughout the year we see a lot of the same kids year after year after year, and yet maybe we celebrate at times those that had the greatest growth, and they might be one that's down getting a lot lower grade, but their growth has been seen. I think we ought to do more of that too.
Well, our foundation board has really been talking quite a bit about that. They did a couple of, they were scholarships. There were some of their smaller scholarships that they handed out at basketball games last year. And some of them were students. They did one, for example, a student who had the biggest change in their GPA from 9th grade to 12th grade. So they've seen the biggest improvement in their GPA. And they recognized that student for that. They said, look, you put the effort in to make some real changes. They've done some that demonstrate, you know, the most improved attendance over a span of time, to recognize when you have students who, for whatever reason, make that decision, you know, I'm going to do more. I'm going to go beyond where I'm currently at, and they do it and they accomplish it, and our foundation board wants to recognize that. And
that's good.
And so that's just to tie in with that. That has been a fantastic conversation. Yeah.
Well, and it's a conversation I would like us to have more of. What we can do, whether it's we bring them into board meeting or we have a certificate from the board that goes to the school and we recognize them there. Because really, I would love to have every student who has growth, you know, that we celebrate that growth. And we could go in the individual classrooms, go to assemblies, do something like that where we go, we recognize kids for their growth, for their attendance, or their something.
I think we definitely look at some doing some things like that, especially towards the end of the year. Especially towards the end of the year, as we start having some of our progress monitoring, we could do our kids for the elementaries, we could do our middle of the year people's progress monitoring, and go to classrooms, go to individuals, go to schools where we have seen, you know, gains in that growth. I think celebrating that growth for students and for teachers would be
So I think about some of our schools who truly every year have a new group of kids because of the transiency. And they try so hard, and yet their stage scores don't necessarily reflect the work they put in. And we know it's discouraging. And so we've tried to not put too much emphasis on it, but you know, in some way we need to celebrate that effort by our teachers.
And I think progress and growth is a good way to do that. And I have to say kudos to the directors, really, this little infographic that's up there right now. That's the result of multiple discussions, and as we've been digging into...
With Jim, another
thing. With everybody. but as we are reading district leadership that works and having some pretty lengthy discussions about the content of that book, and then thinking, okay, how do we translate these ideas into behaviors and into structures? And we'll be going down a path, and then somebody will ask a question, and we all say, you know what, you're right, we need to look at it from that angle as well. And it's been some really a very in-depth discussion and process that I really value that all of the directors should be willing to take part in. And it leads, that whole group discussion leads to another one-on-one discussion here and another discussion here, and people start drawing things, and you find out how different people take notes and how they organize their ideas. And I think my post-its are a really sloppy way of doing it. But it really has been fantastic to see that, and then to have those discussions with the principals and have them start identifying how these pieces are implemented in their buildings and how do we do this in a way that promotes consistency in the school and supports teachers and supports students. Those conversations have been fun to watch. It gets me more and more excited about where I think we're going to end up.
Well, and I like that as a board, we've had our collective commitments with tracks for a number of years, and then to come up with what our mission is, and our realization that we can't set the others.
Mm-hmm.
We can't set the goals. We can't set that vision. It needs to be not top heavy, but more of an input from those who are in the trenches and who know what's going on and what's truly achievable. And I love the discussion that's taken place. I think good discussion is as important as the results we're going to get.
So I'm excited to have worked with those two focus groups now, the parents and the teachers. And
how will you select which teachers are invited?
They will be the ones on the community council.
Okay, so
I'm going to focus on community council membership for both this teacher and the student, or both the teacher and the parent representation.
People have been willing to go the extra mile. And
they should have been selected by their peers, mm-hmm. the representatives. They've been willing to be part of that. They're usually aware of what the schools are doing for the school improvement plans, and the approval process. So these are individuals who are involved in what's going on at the school, and they have a solid awareness of that. I think the perspective they'll be able to bring should help us move into the discussion.
Great.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions, input on this?
That's great.
All right. We have had all of our discussion in this work session, and a couple of items. I did send everyone an email today with all of our music activities. I didn't put, Chris sent me to the end of the year, but Logan High doesn't know where they're going to be doing concerts and other things through the end of the year, so until we have those locations, I thought we'll kind of wait until they get some of that worked out. We are going to have an additional board walkthrough next Wednesday. We're going to be walking through Logan High School rather than today, so that we can have at least one extra board member here, if not all five of us. So that will be next Wednesday, the 20th, at 4 o'clock, we'll be at Logan High School.
I cannot make it. I have to be to a very important fast-forward board meeting.
Okay, we'll make sure we can have
at least three board members there.
So I will.
It's actually the 21st.
It is the 21st.
Okay.
No, I'm in April. That's my problem.
The 20th is the day that I have my.
So the 21st is a Wednesday. It's on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, it is on Wednesday.
This is the one I emailed you guys about. That.
And it's the 21st.
And what time are you talking?
It is at 4 o'clock.
Okay. 21st, I'll be there.
Okay.
I have been moving myself so much on that one, I forgot my last email. Is that my last email that I'm running the October one? Or did I say I've got to go? No, the last email I sent said, I have to do this, so I'm going to have to do the December one.
We will be done by current, I promise you that.
Let me check my sent emails. I remember composing it.
I remember applying to the registry.
Did the December one?
I remember that.
I just looked at the.
Do you remember the reason for receiving that one from me?
I swear I did. That's good. Yeah, that sounds right. But Shane won't be there.
Shane will not.
Anything else anybody needs to bring up? So on October 21st at 4 o'clock, we are at Logan High School.
Meeting of the.
We'll meet at that conference room in front of the office.
Okay.
All right, at 4. All right, then this meeting is adjourned. Wonderful. My husband won't believe it.
Better go shopping.